The Lord be with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John.
Pilate said to Jesus, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this on your own, or have others told you about me?" Pilate answered, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom does not belong to this world. If my kingdom did belong to this world, my attendants would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not here." So Pilate said to him, "Then you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." The Gospel of the Lord. In the third millennium, where we are, when whatever monarchs and kings and queens and so on are little more than figureheads, remnants that are no longer functional, but usually objects of gossip, despite having banquets, royal banquets, and carriages and all those sorts of things, you might ask, well, why are we celebrating a feast called Christ the King? There are several reasons, I think, why we do this. It's a relatively late feast of the liturgy, 1925. So you might say, well, why 1925? Why not some other time? It's always worth asking these questions. And there is a historical explanation, a political explanation, and a liturgical explanation. I'll touch very briefly on each one. Then I want to look at the readings, and then I want to make three points, very simple ones that you can remember: perspective, patience, and perseverance. Three P's. Had the USC football team practiced these, they would have won. So first of all, historical, 1925. I'm guessing that this is one explanation you would not have picked up on. It's actually the 1600 years anniversary of the Council of Nicaea. I know that's riveting, but in 325, there was a very clear statement by the church that Jesus was of the same substance, we say this in the Creed, of the same substance as the Father. In other words, Jesus is Lord. So, 1600 years later, Catholics catch on to things maybe a little later than most people, but here it is. A second reason was, anyone who had gone through World War I realized that this was an age of militarism, an age of nationalisms, fascism, and within a decade or two, you're going to end up with Hitler. You already had Stalin. You had Pol Pot coming later, Mao Zedong. They plagued our centuries, and they continue to plague us. So when you think that somehow you've been able to avoid these people who are convinced that they have the solution, and if they can do it, they're going to change it, and everything is going to be right. They're going to fix it. Some of you are old enough. A number of you are actually old enough. I'm kidding. To remember the musical Camelot? Remember it? I thought of that when I thought about this perfect kingdom, the utopian. Utopian, utopos in Greek means no topos, no place. It doesn't exist. And when you think you have the solution, heads roll, because you're going to get it done. But when you look at the Camelot, I grabbed the lyrics off the computer last night, and I pictured Richard Burton singing this. A law was made a distant moon ago. July and August cannot be too hot. There's a legal limit to snow here in Camelot. The winter's forbidden till December, and exits March the second on the dot. By order, summer lings through September in Camelot. The rain may never fall till after sundown. We'd just like it to fall someday. By 8, the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot. It actually doesn't exist. And if we think that we can make this happen, we've underestimated our potential for sin and for the need for forgiveness and all those sorts of things. If you look at the readings, the liturgical celebration. Liturgical celebration is very simple. When you put something in the calendar every year, you have to revisit it. And if it's in the calendar every year, Christ the King, in an age where there are no more kings anymore, you have a kind of migraine. How do you work this out? How do you think about what does it mean to have Christ as your king? That question then comes to us every year, and it's good. It's good that it does. Let's take a look at the readings. They're very short. From the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation. Both of these readings were written at a time when first the Jewish people, the Israelites, and then the Christians were under great persecution. So the book of Daniel is about 160, 170 years before Jesus. The Syrians were attacking the Jews. Things were very difficult. So they talked about someone coming on the clouds. The same phrase is used in the book of Revelation. In that first reading, there are several mentions, actually three, of dominion. This ancient one was presented before God. He received dominion, glory, so on. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. Unfortunately, that word today, when you translate dominion, means dominate. If you dominate, you know, an offense or defense dominates. This is power. It's a direct exercise. That's not the best understanding of what it means biblically. In the gospel, in the second reading, you have Jesus coming in the midst of the clouds and then an incredible statement about who he is, who he is. This is an important word. You get this literature all this week until the first Sunday of Advent, this coming Sunday. So we're kind of in the wrap-up phase of the liturgical year, and there's a lot of apocalyptic literature. You know, the moon's crashing and stars are going. Because what it's trying to do is say it's not a prediction, it's not even a description. This kind of literature is not that. What it is a word of hope in the midst of struggle. That's what apocalyptic literature is. It's a word of hope. Don't read it as a kind of literal description, like at some point the star is going to crash and everything. People turn the Bible into a science book. It's not a science book. As I like to say it, it is not about the age of rocks, it's about the rock of ages. Very important to understand that difference. So then in the gospel, we have this dramatic scene of Jesus standing before Pilate. They didn't include the final verse. That's unfortunate. It's where Pilate says, "What is truth? Truth is not truth." We heard that recently. What is truth? And Jesus stands before him and declares to him, "My kingdom does not belong to this world." Okay, 3 points. The first one is perspective. I think this feast, rightly understood, when you say, don't you think this, when you say someone really has perspective,
There's a certain wisdom, isn't it? I'm not talking about, oh, you have an interesting perspective. I'm talking about this person really has perspective. They put things in proportion. They don't get blown away by a particular event, and so on. So perspective is one of the things that I think this feast brings forward. How does it do it? Well, first of all, it says that my kingdom is not of this world. It is in the world, but not of the world. You've heard that phrase. The document of the Second Vatican Council, Gaudium et Spes, Joy and Hope, the English translation is the church in the modern world. The church in, not above the modern world, not enslaved by the modern world, but in the modern world, but not of it. By now, most of you have encountered that phrase, that critique that Karl Marx made of Christianity. It was the opium of the people. It just drugged people so that they really, all they did was they longed for heaven, were that true, and didn't do anything here. They waited till the end time and then they'll be fine. They didn't have to work for justice and to try to change things. Vatican II responded to that pretty powerfully. C.S. Lewis wrote this once, which I think is a pretty good statement. He said, if you read history, you will find that the Christians who did the most for the present world were just those who thought the most of the next world. It is since Christians have largely ceased to think of the other world that they have come to be so ineffective in this world. That's perspective. That's perspective. Another way to think about it, if I can put it this way, is that the war has been won, even though we're still in all kinds of battles, and we will continue to be in battles. But never lose the perspective that the Lord is King. What about the second point? The second point has to do with patience. I thought that as I got older, I would become more patient. That is not true for me. I actually have a shorter fuse now than I used to. And I don't consider that progress. Again? Stop it. I get impatient. The word patience, if you go to the root in Latin, means the ability to suffer. The ability to deal with things when they're not going your way. There's a story I want to tell you that I mentioned to one of my community members last evening. They said, you're not going to tell that story, are you? I said, yes, I am. And it goes like this. A visiting pastor was attending a men's breakfast in a Mississippi farm country. He asked one of the impressive older farmers in attendance to say grace that morning, and after all were seated, the old farmer began, Lord, I hate buttermilk. The pastor opened one eye and wondered to himself where this was going. Then the farmer proudly proclaimed, Lord, I hate lard. Now the pastor was really worried. However, without missing a beat, the farmer prayed on, and Lord, you know, I don't care much for raw white flour. Just as the pastor was ready to stand and stop everything, the farmer continued, but Lord, when you mix them together and bake them up, I do love fresh biscuits. So Lord, when things come up we don't like, when life gets hard, when we just don't understand what you are saying to us, we just need to relax and wait till you are done mixing. And probably it'll be something even better than biscuits. Amen. All right, maybe I shouldn't have read that. It's a little corny, but in fact, it makes the point. You know, when things can't figure them out and so on, it says in Vatican II very clearly, though this doesn't always look this way, that don't expect the hierarchy of the church to have answers to every question. You might say, duh, well, of course. But that's never been admitted in an official teaching. We don't know. There are things we don't understand. There are things that would be wise if we had some perspective and we had some patience. We'd say, well, time will, my mother used to say this always, time will tell. I don't think she knew that Cardinal John Henry Newman put it a little more eloquently. He said, truth is the daughter of time. Truth is the daughter of time. It takes time to see some things. I see freshmen at USC that are in panic because they're not sure what their major is. Sometimes I ask them, what's your major this semester? That's not funny. But I do think it's important that people take time to look, to listen, and eventually some of the most important insights will come. Finally, what about perseverance? What about perseverance? There's a really interesting little book that came out 2 years ago. It's kind of a bestseller. I'm not advertising this, but I don't know how many of you know the name Krista Tippett. She does interviews on NPR, that liberal radio station, called Becoming Wise. And these interviews are kind of put together here. In the last chapter of her book, she puts together a number of interviews that shed some light on hope, And I think people that persevere have to have hope. To stay at it, you have to have hope. And here are some of the things she says about hope. It says, it's a willingness to sit with people in pain. If you've ever been a caregiver, sometimes it's difficult. And even the pain can be depression. Depression is very, very difficult. And to sit with people, not to bolt. She quotes one professor of social work who says, I've studied 11,000 cases. I cannot find a single example of courage, moral courage, spiritual courage, leadership courage, relational courage. I cannot find a single example of courage that was not born completely of vulnerability. It's not courage unless you have skin in the game and you can lose. That's hope. She writes again, she says, hope is not an emotion. Hope is a cognitive behavioral process that we learn when we experience adversity and when we are strengthened by relationships of love. Today, psychologists speak a great deal about resilience, a person that has resilience. You know, there are people that are very fragile, and there's one bad thing happens and they can collapse completely. Hope, drawing on patience, prepares us for the long run. Perspective, Jesus is Lord. He is the faithful witness. He is the beginning and the end. He is the one who is, who was, and who is to come. He is the one in whom we can place our trust. And it says in the gospel itself, everyone who belongs to me belongs, not just speculates, belongs to the truth, has this kind of hope. I came across this Korean prayer. From the cowardice that dare not face the truth, from the laziness that is content with half-truths, and from the arrogance that thinks it knows all truth, good Lord, deliver us. To the truth that makes us free, to the truth that keeps us to see, to the truth that makes its home in thee, good Lord, deliver us. Jesus is Lord. It's reason for us to persevere, to be patient, and to keep perspective.